Welcome to Blue Collar Mystics, the under-the-hood approach to the depths of human consciousness. So many mysteries, so little time, so many big words. That's why we aim to take the mystical and make it practical, usable in your everyday life. And you know, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your story. What happened when you started asking yourself the real questions? Like, who am I? What is this? Is it a hologram? Is this some kind of weird cosmic joke? Hey, these are the questions that we are trying to get to the bottom of as we explore the final rabbit hole together here as Blue Collar Mystics. What's up, everybody? How's it going? Welcome to the show. We are on the Blue Collar Mystics show, and this is a very special series with the great Abby Johnson. We are doing a transurfing safari. What's up, Abby?
What's up? How's it going?
Going really, really well. Before we get started, I got a couple of announcements. I keep forgetting to do this, but I've got some dates coming up. I'm going to be doing some comedy on the way out to Texas. I'll be at the Eclipse at the Canyon event with Grimerica. Let me see if I can open up this window here and I'll make it go on the screen. The Eclipse is April 8th, I believe. This is near San Antonio. It's like a kind of, they're doing like a music festival type thing. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be out there hanging out. It will sell out. So if you're interested in that, definitely go and check it out. I've got dates on the way out there. I have, date where I'm featuring in New Orleans at the Ugly Dog Saloon on April 5th. And then I'm looking still for some dates. I'll be in Austin the 8th and then, or the, I'm sorry, the 9th and 10th. And I'm looking for, and then probably going to be in Houston on the 11th. Still waiting to hear back on that. So I'm looking for a date on the 6th, maybe in Houston. And anyway, other than that, I'll also, this is a really cool and exciting thing, be at the Befriending Bigfoot Excursion in Blairsville, Georgia with Expanding Reality podcast. This is Brandon Thomas. It's also a couple of other people, Chris Matthew, if you know, from Forbidden Knowledge News, and Alexander, forgot his last name. He did this really cool Bigfoot documentary. The link is down below in the show notes. So definitely check those things out. It's going to be really fun. There's a lot of even other fun things to announce. I'm doing a special show at the Befriending Bigfoot thing. It's a big surprise, a lot of fun. Check that out. I'm excited. And there's going to be some other cool things in the works. I'm sure the Secret Society of Good Guys has some cool things to announce coming up as well. If you missed it, they had the Netflix and Chill inaugural. Tell us a little bit about that, Abby.
Well, we decided to do a Sunday night live stream. We'll start on YouTube and then we'll move over to Patreon where we're going to view movies and, you know, have our audience with us and we'll pause here and there and chat it up. We'll dissect and do it live.
Do it live.
We'll Netflix and chill.
Awesome. Yeah. Y'all be streaming like different movies and doing commentary on the movies.
Yep, we're starting with Midsommar, I think, so it'll be okay. Fun.
That's cool. I'll have to check that out because I don't think I've ever actually seen Midsommar.
Neither have I. So right, I'm gonna cold watch it.
Cool, awesome. It'll be new for everybody. Well, welcome everybody. We are exploring this incredibly thick book, which has kind of been a guidebook for both of us over the past few years, and exploring the concepts, re-exploring the concepts, re-practicing the concepts, remembering the concepts in the book, and going back through them. This is a very exciting and special episode. This is really, I would say, probably Abby's specialty and expertise. We are exploring the seventh chapter in the book. If you're following along, it's called Intention. And really, the kind of whole premise of the book has to do with this power of intention. He says in the beginning of the book, I do not wish, I do not hope, I intend. So at the beginning of the book, you know, we talked a little bit about infinity. We talked about the idea of pendulums. We talked about cascading fortune and the opposite of that, which is like a downward spiral. And then we talked about balance as well. And then we talked a little bit about the sort of flow of alternatives, how things kind of come into existence last week, which is very interesting as well, kind of very abstract, if you will. And today we are going to talk about this magical power called intention. As you were reading this chapter again, did anything particular stick out to you to start with?
Oh my gosh, you should see the highlights. I mean, it's like pretty much the whole beginning. That's so funny. No, I'm like, why am I highlighting this? Like, you know it, but it still is awesome because it really gets into lucid dreaming, which is I learned from this book actually. And really, it is a superpower to helping you learn intention and how intention works. Because it's not, you know, probably everyone who's watching this has seen The Secret and has tried it and is like, wants the law of attraction to work. But law of attraction really does teach you to almost put importance on your desire, it seems like. It did to me. I don't know if that's the way you took it.
Yeah, well, it was a fantastical sort of romanticized, simplified kind of kindergarten version of all of this metaphysical stuff. I saw The Secret in like the early 2000s. I watched it with my cousin and I was like, oh wow. And then, you know, it was interesting to watch. I took a lot from it, but honestly, it just oversimplified the concepts a lot and just, it was very cheesy, you know, and this book just does such a better job of unraveling all of the sort of nuance that goes along with this kind of airy fairy stuff.
I felt like it made you almost like put too much desire on things and too much want. And this book really teaches you that those are the antithesis to getting.
Yeah, we talked a lot about distortion and balance and ultimately what importance is, right? There's two different types of importance, internal and external importance. Internal importance is when we think that we are, you know, better than, or we, you know, we have this sense of entitlement that's out of balance. And then external importance is having putting something on a pedestal, which is a lot of desire one way or the other. Like if I don't get this, then, you know, the idea of balance is like the scales are like this and you're like, well, I'm going to put all my eggs in this basket. And then you totally throw everything out of balance and out of whack. And then all of a sudden you get a flick in the ear or a flick on the nose, as he says, you know, things are now out of balance. And so he talks about the different types of desire and or intention in this chapter. I don't know, what should we start with? Because there's really a lot to unpack. He definitely starts, the preamble is really a lot about lucid dreams. So maybe let's start there. Let's talk about lucid dreams and kind of compare that to reality.
Okay, well, I think we should probably just start at the beginning because lucid dreaming is a foreign concept to some. Some people think that just means like you're really aware and that, or not just aware, that you remember your dream really well, that was vivid.
Okay.
And a vivid dream is not the same thing as a lucid dream. A lucid dream is where you're dreaming, and then all of a sudden your conscious mind wakes up and it's like, oh, I'm dreaming right now. And all of a sudden you can change the script of the dream. So it's, you're still asleep. Your body's still asleep. Your mind just wakes up while you're dreaming. And that is basically, it teaches you so much about, he talks about inner versus outer intention. But I guess, I don't know, we should get into how you start lucid dreaming, probably.
Okay.
And he recommends that you pay attention to your surroundings and ask yourself about 10 times a day, minimum. You know, every time you think of it, ask yourself, am I awake or am I dreaming or is this real? And you don't just answer it. You have to kind of look around, you know, and make sure that everything is real. And then you answer the question, like, I'm awake. And some people, it only takes a couple of days. It took me about a month, and some people takes like up to 3 months, he said. But it eventually does work. Eventually, you're going to find yourself in a dream, and you're like, wait, am I dreaming? I'm dreaming. And you wake up in the dream. So that's the beginning of it, really. And it worked for me. It like I said, it took about a month. He said if you have a clock, like a chiming clock, that would actually work really well, because every time the clock chimes, you could ask yourself and you'll hear it when you sleep. But you can't do that with like a phone ringing or anything like that, because it would take a phone ringing in your dream for you to wake up. So it's just got to be random things, random times throughout the day that you ask yourself. But really, the importance of lucid dreaming is that when you wake up in the dream, you can pretty much choose the script. You get to choose what happens. You can't control every variable. You can't control the whole dream, but you can choose. And I mean, I have an example of this, because one of my first lucid dreams, not one of my first, but when I started really experimenting in them, I tried walking through a wall, because I mean, why not? Why shouldn't I try that? Right. And I went to put my hand through the wall, and I tried to stick my hand through the wall, and I hit it. It made a noise, like it made an actual noise, and I could feel the mass of it. And I couldn't put my hand on the wall, but I was really using my brain, which is your inner intention. So inner intention will never manifest things. So that's why it's so hard in the waking world to manifest what you want, because you're trying to use your willpower, you know, your brain, like to get what you want. And really it takes your heart or your subconscious, your soul, to highlight the sector in the alternatives space, like the space of alternatives that we've talked about before. You have to, your heart's the only thing that can choose the script there. And that means even in reality. So because it has to access it from a space of variations. So if you're using your brain to try to do things, you often get in your own way and it doesn't happen very well. Your willpower isn't, you're fighting against the current. But if you can convince your heart that that's what you want, like to choose it, then your heart will highlight that sector for, it knows its way around the alternative space. Is that how you would describe it there? Owen, do I get more into the whole heart and mind thing before I get back into lucid dreaming? Or?
Yeah, I think that's a really good explanation. We could talk a little bit about heart and mind a little bit. Well, actually, a couple things come to mind.
Inner and outer intention.
Yeah, we'll definitely need to get into that. A couple things come to mind too that I just want to kind of throw out there for anybody who is new to lucid dreaming. There are a lot of different triggers. You could like wear a ring or, you know, something like that, you know, to kind of remind yourself. There's a really cool movie called Waking Life. It's a Richard Linklater movie. I freaking love it so much. Such a great movie. It's real trippy and cool. But there's a lot of interesting insight into dreaming and lucid dreaming. Someone in the chat says they can't even remember their dreams. Ah! And that's something that I've struggled with. So I can definitely relate to that. A little bit of intention to remember your dreams, and it will help you. And also lay off the cannabis. it seems to be a common pattern, right? Like the more people smoke weed, the less likely they are to remember their dreams. But yeah, so if you're new to lucid dreaming, there's also a few episodes. We did one with Robert Wagner maybe a year or so ago, who literally wrote the book on lucid dreaming and has, you know, done some incredible work and experiments in lucid dreaming. So there's a lot of possibility there. I think what really enamored me when I got to this part in the book the first time was that he was talking about lucid dreaming and that the alternative space itself is synonymous with the dream world. So I had always, I don't know why I should, I'm like, duh, of course I should have known that, but I had never put two and two together on that. So I've heard, you know, the Kybalion, the all is mind, the universe is mental. And it never even occurred to me that the mental space of variations or alternatives or infinity itself, the film roll archive, the Akashic records, all that
it's
stuff.
It's the dream space.
It's all the same thing. It's all the dream space.
It's so like a collective memory palace.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which really is cool to, it, I don't know, for me, something really clicked with that. And then, so the idea that, oh, when we're in the material reality, we're basically in this shared dream space and the concepts are the same, as above, so below, as within, so without, as in the dream world, so be the physical world, right? Those things really started to click for me, right? Like, so that helped me a lot to be able to conceptualize my goals, my desires, you know, whatever, things that I wanted to see materialize in the world from the dream space of alternatives. Cause I'm like, oh, everything is possible in the dream world. And I had had a lucid dream before, not too long after I saw that movie, and it was super intense. And when I woke up from it, like, I just felt like so energized and so, it was so surreal. And so I had had that experience. And so I felt this sort of ability to be in control from that dream, and that sensation kind of carried over. And I still know kind of what that feels like as far as what intention is, because in the dream I was walking through a Walmart parking lot and I looked up and it said Wall Rock Cafe, and I was like, that ain't right. And then I realized in that moment, I was like, I'm in a dream. And so what I did, I don't know why I did this. I'm a little chaos punk rock kid. I was much younger. I was like, hey, you, to like a dream character. I was like, push over all those grocery carts. And then they did it, you know? And then I went into, the store and just messed about and came out and then started flying. And so I was consciously, you know, doing these things. I knew that I wanted to fly and I did fly. And for whatever reason, I wanted somebody to push over a bunch of grocery carts. I don't know. I'm a different person now. Don't judge me, okay? Based on my first lucid dream. But I...
yeah, but see, that's like... I was going to say, your mind is a little in control, but your heart kind of is too. And, you know, if it's a little chaotic, that's okay.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Nobody got hurt. It's just some shopping carts in the alternative space. No big deal, dude.
Well, my first lucid dreams were like sex.
Of course.
Not going to lie.
Nothing wrong with that.
It took me a while to like break that circuit. And then I was like, wait a second. Okay.
Try something different.
Let's do something else. Yeah. Let's walk through walls.
Right. But understanding that intention. And so like for the purposes of transurfing, it's really not about lucid dreaming. This is just a great way to sort of go into the lab. You don't have any real consequences. Well, he says that you could like disappear or whatever, but I don't know about all that. Maybe so, but everybody that I've ever talked to has had a lucid dream.
That's what Don Juan did.
I mean,
they all left the world.
And he says, you know, they may have done it on purpose or they may have just been fooling about and accidentally left the world, but that's fine. I don't know. For our purposes, I would say don't be afraid that you're going to get, you know, carried off into some other world.
But he says if you're afraid when the topic comes up of lucid dreaming, then it's not for you and you shouldn't try it. But if it's intriguing, you should definitely do it.
Right. It's like a way to experiment with intention, because
everything that you think of is manifested almost immediately. Whereas here we have the delay because on this side of reality, you have mass, you know, like everything has matter, matter has mass. So it slows everything down. So there, and that's the one thing that really blew my mind when he talked about it, was that it's a real place. Like, you're actually experiencing it. Your brain is actually seeing what you see there, because in a memory, you could have a memory of anything in your life. But even if I think of an apple right now, I can think of it really well, but it's a whole lot different actually seeing an apple. And in a dream, you're actually seeing the things that are around you. Like, I remember seeing this mountain one time, and I knew it wasn't quite a lucid dream. It was pretty close, but I looked at this mountain. I was like, that exists somewhere in the real world. Like, I knew it was a dream, but I wasn't in control of the dream. So I could look at this mountain and I could see all the crevices and stuff in it. And I was like, that exists somewhere on the real world. I know this is real. You know, like, I could see all the fine detail in it, and you can't do that with a memory. So this is something, this is a real place that you are actually observing when you're sleeping.
Yeah. I remember studying dreams in college, and the overall, nobody, obviously in psychology, they didn't tell us what dreams were, but the biggest like theory of dreams was that it was your mind compressing your memories from the day. But when we have a dream and see something that we've never conceptualized ever before, it's like, that doesn't satisfy that definition or explanation of what dreams are. It doesn't satisfy what actually happens when we're asleep, because like, so many genius ideas, so many incredibly unbelievable, awe-striking types of things that,
you know, Edison, Einstein, all of them, they pulled so many of their best ideas from their dreams.
The Beatles, you know, I've had them too. And sometimes I wake up and then they're just, they're just right out of reach. You know, sometimes if you don't immediately get it, you know, then it can just fade away pretty quickly. But but yeah, it's very fascinating. And so to think that the same intention that we would use in a lucid dream is the same intention that we would use in the material world in order to materialize that which we desire. There is a delay because, like you said, the mass, the density of physical reality makes it a slower process, basically.
Because in order to pull that into reality, so if you're in a dream and you're in like your soul has gone to a different sector, because your heart is always what chooses the sector of the dream world that you're in. Your brain is what decides what script is going to play in a dream. So this is non-lucid dreaming. So when you're in a spot that like is so far from your reality, you could pull that into reality. Like, you could make that is a possible alternative to the reality, but because of the different elements of matter that would have to be brought into it, if it's too far from the current lifeline you're on, it's going to take a lot longer and it's a much harder process. So that is, I took that tonight, and that was kind of like interesting to me, like the why, you know, because it's not that you couldn't do it. It's just that your heart, your subconscious, your outer intention has to be so strong without any importance and with all knowing. And it's not even faith. It's beyond faith. It's just knowing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's crazy.
Which is really hard to do without practice. And that's why lucid dreaming is such a good tool, because like I was saying, when I tried to stick my hand through the wall, I hit it really hard and I couldn't put my hand through the wall. And so I tried it again and I did it again. But what I had to do, because I realized I wasn't using the right intention, I just closed my eyes and I said, put your hand through the wall. And I just, and then all of a sudden I did, and I was able to walk through it. And it was so weird. It was like a gelatinous cake. It was so bizarre. But yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of examples that I can think of that are kind of real world, simple examples when it comes to intention. And oh, this actually came to mind. And this was from someone else. I can't remember who talked about this, but with intention, intention's obviously different than desire, and we can kind of break that down a little bit. First I'll just do a quick, you know, straightforward sort of example. So if two people are walking down a sidewalk, directly toward each other. Whoever has the strongest intention is going to continue to move straight, and the other one's going to get out of their way. If you've ever been at a party and someone's been sick, you know, and they're like, she's going to throw up, you know, everybody just moves right out of their way. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't want yak all over their shoes. You know what I mean? And so like, that is pure intention. Like, I got to go to the bathroom now, like, get out of my way. I'm sick. Like, I got to move. And people just scatter. Like, they know. You could be like a punk rock, you know, mosh pit, and people just move right out of the way. So that is that. Those are some like simple examples that I can think of, you know, as far as intention goes. And what I want to add to that is what someone was talking about a little while ago. And I can't remember who it was, but this made so much sense. You know, in the Transurban book, he talks a lot about how we always get what we don't want. And most of the time, whenever we have an intention, we also have a counter intention. There are two things sort of going on. We have an intention. So let's say, I don't know, examples like I'm going to do stand-up comedy, right? So my intention is to do well. My counter intention is not to bomb. So it's kind of like I have gas to do well and then a brake not to bomb. And so I'm like riding these two pedals, which is really only giving me what I don't want. It's not giving me what I do want. You got to put that gas all the way down, all the way to the floor, and have no brakes, right? Like the person that has to go to the bathroom right now, like that is pure intention, right? There's no resistance there. There's no counter intention. It's just absolute pure. This is, like you said, it's beyond sort of faith.
Yeah, it's just absolute knowing. And
yeah, it just like if you've ever met somebody and you're like, it's on, you know, like I just know, like it's a click, you know, you just automatically, or they say love at first sight or whatever, an experience like that where you're just like, it just is that. Or, you know, many other experiences where you just know that you know that you know. Like whenever I was graduating college and a girl came in and did her presentation on Costa Rica Outward Bound School, I didn't know how I was going to make enough money or raise enough money to go there. She even said that she had a bad experience, but I was like, nope, I'm going. It doesn't matter. That's my next thing. And I just knew it. That was going to be it. And it was all gas, no brakes. And I wound up going there, and it was a huge sort of transformational experience for me. So I think we should get into inner and outer intention. Before we do, Brittany Pickle Spears here in the comments has a question. Do you think it still constitutes as lucid dreaming if you're just aware of the dream in the dream, but not controlling it?
The dream searchers or dream hackers, they make a distinction between even lucid dreaming and clear dreaming, because lucid dreaming is almost when you know you're dreaming and you're kind of following the script, and clear dreaming is when you're like, no, I'm awake and I'm doing this, you know? So not everyone makes that distinction, but you know, the dream hackers who did a lot in the art of dreaming, following the Castaneda principles and stuff, they say there is a distinction. So like the other night I had a lucid dream and I didn't quite control it. I was following the script because I had like four guides around, like kind of ushering me through their dream space and telling me what I needed to do. And then other nights I clear dream where I'm like, oh, I'm going to create a space where all my friends can meet up. And I sit there with intention and it's all there. So there's a little bit of a difference, but yeah, it's a lucid dream.
I think so.
But I think a lot of people don't know that when they get lucid, and because I've had a few people comment recently after my episode with Paranoid American that they didn't know that they could actually do experiments when they wake up in the dream. They thought it was kind of boring, or they would just follow the script. Mm. But if you have ideas of things that you want to try ahead of time, and you sit and think about them, you know, intend to do it before you go to bed. And it might not happen that night, but the next time you lucid dream, you're gonna be like, oh yeah, I wanted to look for this person in the dream and see if I can meet up with them. Or, oh yeah, I was going to go to Mount Shasta and I'm going to create a space for me and all my friends to hang out. Or this time I wanted to fly, this time I wanted to look in a mirror, you know, and all of a sudden you're doing it. So if you kind of have an idea ahead of time what you want to do, you're more likely to get even more clear and do it. And what I really found helps to, because the dream, just like real life, because that's the trick to doing it in real life, is to be lucid while you're awake. Like, it means instead of like being all the way zoomed in on the film roll and what's happening right now, it's kind of taking a step back and you're looking at the wider picture. And I forgot what my point was with that.
Well, you were just talking. You were just talking about how you could think about things in advance before you go into the dream space to try out. If you become like clearly dreaming and you're like, oh, and then you will remember some things to do.
Yeah. And really every experiment that you do there is practice in intention, and it's practice on using your outer intention, because you're using your brain, but your brain isn't going to doubt anything, and it's not going to prevent you. It's not going to fear anything really either. So at that point, your heart's just like, okay, bet I'm on board with this. Let's try it.
Yeah. I'm interested to get deeper into sort of the distinctions between heart and mind, which we certainly will. That's like an upcoming chapter. It's certainly something that is essential, and it's also part of basically every esoteric tradition that ever was, is, or will probably ever exist. But before we do that, we should talk a little bit about inner and outer intention, because that's sort of the next little part of this particular chapter. So we are going to clarify that, just to let everybody know, we are going to clarify more, because I'm interested too. Like, I, even in understanding some of these esoteric, you know, principles of heart and the mind, like which function does one do versus the other? Vadim even says, like, you could write a whole book on just the heart and mind, which I probably will. The inner and outer intention definitely have a lot to do with these two parts. So for instance, inner intention, so the mind has will, but the heart is the one that is really connected to the space of variation. So we talked a little bit about that last week with the tarot card, the Lovers.
Yeah. I was going to say, just like the Lovers card.
Yeah. And so with our inner intention, and kind of think of that, I would say, like, even as ego, you know, he doesn't ever use the word ego in this book, which I love. I love the fact that he doesn't do that, because it's kind of like an overused word, you know, with all the, but inner intention is defined as the concentration of attention on the process of moving towards the goal. It's forceful and pushy. It's not smooth, but can move someone toward their goal. It uses desire mostly to push its way toward the outcome, as opposed to using effortless movement that unites the participant with their goal. Inner intention is defined as the resoluteness in the decision to have an act. So when we hear a lot of, probably I would say, like, older esoteric teachings, they're very focused on inner intention and desire. When the old school sort of magic is really about conjuring up and summoning all this inner intention and getting it like hyphy and then releasing it and letting it go. Whereas outer intention is a much smoother process. It says that it gives the green light for the autonomous realization of a goal. Outer intention moves the goal toward you as you move toward it. With outer intention, you don't make anything happen. It just happens that.
So one example he gives is that like raising your hand, like, you can have the intention to raise your hand and never do it. You could have, like, but, you know, it takes that idea that I'm going to raise my hand and then just doing it, you know? So outer intention is knowing it can happen and allowing it to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably way oversimplified.
No. I think you're right. You're exactly right. No, he's like, you could desire to move your hand and still not do it, right? But intention just moves the hand. Mm-hmm. It just does the thing. Like, that's it. It's like, boom. I'm just doing it. And so outer intention is, if there's anything close to a definition of how magic operates in the world, it would be outer intention. This is what allows things to happen in a effortless path of least resistance type of way. And I think the way that sort of traditional old school magic works is it takes a lot of inner intention and it drums it all up and it just kind of puts it out there. And then you're supposed to like let that go so that outer intention can fulfill that goal.
Because then your subconscious finally believes that it's possible, and your subconscious is kind of synonymous with that heart, which is related to outer intention.
Yeah. So you're taking your conscious mind and you're pressing this into your subconscious over and over and over and over and over and over again. And then you push it out there and basically,
which would be kind of like releasing the importance. Yeah. So balancing forces don't disallow it to happen.
Exactly. But the transurfing model, it's way more elegant than that because you can just use outer intention from the get. You don't have to
You can skip the ritual. Yeah,
exactly. You can just skip the ritual and allow the thing to come toward you.
That's what I liked about it. It's magic without all, I mean, magic is such a funny word, you know, because really it's, that is overcomplicating it too.
It is science. But what we're doing essentially, and it's the same as in magic or any other, you know, esoteric thing, we are creating a unification or an agreement between the heart and the mind. So it doesn't matter how, and he even says, like, we are the ritual, right? Like, I think we talked about that already. It's like, it doesn't matter what the ritual is. That's not the point. You can have a ritual. Nothing wrong with having a ritual. Have as many rituals as you like. If that's helpful to you, create your own ritual, use older rituals, traditional rituals. That's irrelevant. The point is that we can find a way to align our heart and our mind together. That's what creates outer intention. So that when you're in that lucid dream and you're like, I want to fly, and then you fly, that is a unification of the heart and mind that allows that to happen. Whenever you are in that lucid dream and you're trying to put your hand through the wall and it wouldn't go through, you didn't have alignment somehow. So you needed to line that up.
It was all my brain going, okay, I'm putting my hand through the wall. And because I was excited and all that. And I've noticed that anytime I want to change the dream and it's not happening right away, I literally have to close my eyes. And a lot of people lose their lucidity when they close their eyes. So, but it doesn't, not for me. Like, I have the intention strongly enough that I can close my eyes, but it helps me to kind of just release it and just know that I can do it. And then I can do it. So it's funny though, because it really took a lot of lucid dreaming experiments like that to realize how much my brain and my inner intention, how strong it is really. So to bypass that, you know, it might take me a little bit of meditation where it doesn't take everybody else all of that, you know, but
Will is a very powerful thing. And I didn't know this either until I talked to Joe Roop, but like Will is in all the esoteric systems. It's in the mind. It's the mental aspect in the process. It's like the heart that wants things, you know, and has this, like, I don't even know what the word would be, but it wants like the toy or whatever. But the mind has the will and the heart has the sort of
the address.
The vision. Knows where to get it. Yeah. And it has the desire, you know, that's where that's coming from. That's not really, I guess the mind can desire things too, but it's generally speaking, I don't know.
Man, well, it can, you know, the mind can desire things, but the heart knows really what it wants. And that's the whole idea of listening to the rustle of the morning stars, because you think you want things with your head, but a lot of times when you get the things that you worked hard for, that you wanted with your head, they're not what, like, you're on to the next thing. You're already bored with it.
It's true.
Want something with your heart, it's a whole lot different when you actually get that. It's something that you value and that, you know, is meaningful to you.
Yeah, that's good. And anytime that our heart and mind agree on anything, positive or negative, we are bringing that towards us. So, you know, back to this idea of intention and counter intention. I really want to drive that home because that's kind of like a really nuanced and, but critical point, you know, like, what is it that you don't want? It's okay to acknowledge and admit that and think about that so that you can eliminate it from your, you know, from yourself, from your action.
From your thinking, like, your anxiety, your worry, because
I mean, those things. I can't tell you how many times I've gone up on stage and been like, oh God, don't bomb. And then what happens? You bomb. Like, there's no way not to. You're not going to be at the cause of the scenario, right? Like, with pure intention, you're putting yourself at the cause. You're in control of at least yourself and really the whole situation. If something doesn't quite go a certain way, you're not miffed by it because you still have your foot on the gas and you're like, I'm doing this. And if you put your foot on the gas and you don't like hesitate, you don't have the counter intention, you don't become susceptible to those, well, then you just learn a valuable lesson. No big deal. You can still fail that way and it's fine.
But that's where you have to find the silver thread and say there's no failure, only feedback, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. It's learning. So, you know, I don't mean to say, but you know, when things don't go quite as you thought they would, sometimes that's all right. Just keep your foot on the gas and just keep going forward. Anyway, right? As opposed to getting stuck in that loop of what you don't want. It's so easy to do that. Like if you're talking to somebody, you're in a sales call. I don't know. I'm trying to think of different examples.
Yeah, because relevant to your other words people. Are still a vibration. Your words, your thoughts all put out a vibration. And your heart can fear. It can feel all those things too. So if your brain is fearing and you're speaking anxiety out into the world, your heart's like, oh yeah, I fear this too. And then boom. That's what you bring into your reality. Like your worst fear is acknowledged.
Yep. And then you just, yeah, you go right into that. You've lost all your momentum with intention because you've succumbed to the outer intention. And or
because your heart can hate just like your mind. So whatever you hate is going to, if you hate something with your head, your heart's going to get behind it. And then you're going to bring it into your reality. Like you manifest the things you don't want because your heart doesn't just love. It can do it has all the feelings.
Yeah. That blew my mind too. That was something that I would have never thought, you know, as you know, we continue to dive into, you know, these concepts between the heart and mind, you know, like I'm very interested to dive deep into those. It is true that you could write a whole book on just those two things. Cause yeah, the nuances, man, is there. The heart does hate and it does love.
Yeah, it does both.
It does.
And so if your brain is hating the shit out of something or someone, like they're going to forget, or, you know, you're worried about something, you are feeling anxiety in your brain, and then you allow your heart to freaking engage with that, which is so easy to do. Cause the second that you lose your focus and you fall asleep in reality and you're not lucid in reality, then you're allowing that to happen. That's your heart's going to go find that reality for you. It's going to go highlight that sector of the alternative space and you're going to watch it play out in your reality.
Which brings us to awareness and becoming the observer in these scenarios more than the participant. Obviously we're both, right? Like we're the video game character avatar, which is fun. That's the fun part. We get to feel the feelings. We get to experience the experiences. It takes, what is it? Maybe it's a Sufi or an Eastern mystic that says it's better to taste sugar than to be sugar. Right. So we get to experience it. We get to be the avatar, the video game player, but we're also the one holding the controller at the same time. So what we want to do is shift our awareness from participant to observer. You know, you still get to participate. You still get to taste sugar. But you also have to realize that you are sugar, that you are in control as well, and begin to shift that awareness. And then, yeah. And then you'll be able to easily kind of see what, if you're succumbing to the counter intentions, as opposed to being fully intended on what it is that you want to do. You know, you go out there, you play like Jimi Hendrix plays when he's on 7 tabs of acid and he just burns his guitar on stage. That's pure intention. And it's badass. You know, people get excited. They get all riled up. You know, you go to like probably a Tony Robbins conference is probably like that. You know, people get just wild, you know, well, as wild as you can get. I don't know. There's probably some coked up people at Tony Robbins.
I bet he brings in a pretty wild crowd, actually.
Yeah, I bet so.
It's got to be very diverse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the people.
Everybody likes money and success, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're hyped up, you know, they're getting wild. But, you know, when you're in the presence of that pure intention, like it's just, it's powerful. People, you know, people pick up on it. It's intense. It's exciting. There's a part of us, I think, that's electrified, you know, when that sail catches the outer intention and people are like, yes, let's go, you know?
For sure. Yeah. So then, not to mix books or anything, but same author, you know, he goes, Tufty the Priestess, he talks about, and he talks about it in this book too, but I like the way he puts it in Tufty. He's, you know, that you need to keep drawing your attention back inside you. Anytime anything happens, you need to wake up. So like your boss is screaming at you, wake up. In reality, like remind yourself that to be awake and activate your guardian act. But in Tufty, he says to keep repeating to yourself, I see myself, which would be your inner screen, your thoughts and stuff. And I see reality. I see what's happening behind me. So instead of just being focused on one or the other, all of a sudden it's like you pan out and you can see the whole picture. And when you're awake, then all of a sudden your boss is yelling at you and you're not reacting anymore. You're not reacting from, you're no longer on that film strip where XYZ was going to happen. All of a sudden you get to choose kind of what happens next. And sometimes the choice is just like he calls it the vaudeville lifeline. Choose the vaudeville lifeline because it's always has the easiest solution. So while it's happening, I can choose that this is going to be the vaudeville lifeline. This is going to be a little bit of a comedy and then watch it pan out. It's so weird when you wake up when stuff happens. But the more you do that in reality, the more things do work in your favor because you're not subject to the script. You keep choosing what's going to happen next.
Yeah, you're not getting swept up into a pendulum, right? Like you are able to stay aware and conscious in that moment when everyone's freaking out, which is kind of funny too, because like you see people scrambling around and they're all like, ah!
And it feels just like a lucid dream though, because they're like, oh, wait a second, I'm awake and all these people are acting like freaking asses. What?
Yeah. And then you're like, wait, this really isn't that big of a deal.
I would have been acting like an ass if I didn't wake up just now.
Yep. It's pretty funny and comical to be in situations like that. And at the same time, you know, we've all been the people who are freaking out too. So like no judgment, yeah. But
no, you're not superior to anyone just because you could do it. It's just really cool when you could.
Awesome. It's the best.
Because you'll forget more times than you remember.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah. But when you remember,
and that's the same as in a lucid dream, you know, you don't dream lucidly as many times as you'd like. You know, I mean, probably if I recapitulated more, I would, but I don't, I'm lazy. So.
Well, what is recapitulation for anyone who doesn't know?
Recapitulation is reclaiming your energy, because the whole point of lucid dreaming is to find your energy body. So it's your double. And or, you know, I guess that would be the replication of your heart, you know, but without enough energy, we'll get into energy, what, next week, or it's coming up soon.
It's coming up soon.
Yeah. Without enough energy, you don't have enough energy to dream, and definitely not enough energy to consciously dream. So like the whole idea is that, I lost my train of thought again. You'd think that I'm a stoner and I'm not.
Recapitulation.
So, you know, you can do it the hard way, which is where you remember every person in your life, you know, starting from the beginning of your life. And you do this breathing method where, and I want to say that Carlos Castaneda pretty much figured out EMDR before EMDR was even a thing, because recapitulation is literally turning your head from right to left, like breathing in, turn your head right to left, and then breathing out in the center. And you just think of every person and every memory you have with them, good or bad, and you do this breathing method. Well, it's a long process to go through every person that you've ever met in your life. So the dream hackers found that you can do recapitulation like really easy every day. And I noticed the quality of my dreams changed immediately because it is a collective dream palace, the dream space. So if you don't recapitulate before bed and like relive your day and, you know, breathe out all the excess energy, reclaim the energy from the day, you'll spend your whole entire dreams like storing those memories in the collective unconscious. So what they suggest you do is that right before you go to bed, it only takes about 5 minutes. You do the breathing method. So turn your head from right to left while you're on an in-breath, and then you breathe out. But you recall everything that happened in the day, and you start with laying down in your bed. So you play your day backwards. Lay down in my bed, you know, brush my teeth. You know, you kind of go backwards and you try to relive the whole day all the way till you woke up. And if you get off on a tangent because all of a sudden you remember a memory of a time long ago, then you still need to think about that and breathe and then go back to where you were on the timeline of the day. But then when you get back to the beginning of the day, you do it opposite. And then you'll remember things you didn't remember when you started at the beginning and go back to the end. So the whole process takes about 5 to 10 minutes. But then when you do this and you go to bed, you don't spend any of your dream time storing memories. All of a sudden you're dreaming and you have so much more dreaming energy.
Yeah.
And when I do it, I lucid dream way more often.
Yeah. And the other thing, that's very interesting. Cause like I did say at the beginning of this, like in psychology, they were like, this is how you know, this is what happens when you dream, your brain is storing memories. And so that is not necessarily untrue. That is one of the functions of dreams.
It's one of the things,
right? Yeah. It's not the whole entire explanation, but whenever I've done the recapitulation, so you're supposed to go backwards through your day to the beginning, and then from the beginning back to the end at the end of the day, and basically try to remember everything that happened to you backwards and then forwards back in. I can never make it, always fall asleep. It's better than counting sheep.
Yeah, but even if you fall asleep, it's okay. But that's why I think he's the one who kind of invented EMDR therapy, because you are going back to forth and then to center. And so you are doing kind of the rapid eye movement thing while you do it. So it is a form of trauma healing, because anytime that you have a trauma or like anything stresses you out and you hold your breath, you trap it in your body, in your fascia. So you have to get it out with your breath. So it combines like the whole breathing technique of it with EMDR. And so that's what Castaneda, he's the true dream guru. Sorry, but he's the one who wrote the first lucid dreaming book.
Well, the Toltecs were around probably thousands of years before.
Yes, they were.
And all this stuff, he even says in here that how the pyramids were built. Like, we have all these theories about how how funny it would be for our ancestors to think that we think that it was like some, you know, less civilized species that built the pyramids. He's like, intention built the pyramids. It wasn't aliens. It wasn't, you know, this, it wasn't a pulley system or whatever. It was probably people like levitating stuff. Who knows what all they could do. Right. And so intention, to sort of bring it all back around, is this very difficult to define aspect. It is defined in the Transurfing book as the determination to have and act. But it's like, does that even explain it? You know what I mean? So I think you're going to have to get your own grasp of it. Like, I've tried to explain it in the most simple ways that I could think of, like a girl at a party that needs to go to the bathroom or whatever, or like people walking down through the street, you know, getting in each other's way or whatever. But I don't know. I would love to hear anybody else's sort of concepts and examples of what intention looks like, you know, or some examples of them experiencing like a more pure intention during their waking life. Cause I, in the dream world, it kind of makes more sense to me, because there's consequences in the physical world and there's a lot of counter intentions to work against.
The way that he describes it, like film rolls, you know, that every reality and everything that happens is a film roll. Like, so when you're asleep on the film roll, you're just a character in a movie, you know, and that's where you would be subject to fate. You're subject to whatever was written on the script. Right. So, outer intention is literally, it's not deciding every little thing that happens. Cause even in a lucid dream, you don't get full control. You can control some things, you know, but it's not necessarily control. It's a matter of choosing. So your heart chooses the next film role while your brain places the order. And so intention on this side is the same thing. It's like your brain can place the order. That's fine. Your heart has to get behind it. And once you intend it, you decide that that's what's going to happen. Then you've chosen the film role. You don't choose all the events that lead up to it and how it's going to play out. You just choose what's going to play next. So the eventual outcome on that role is that, or on that film, is that you're going to get your intention, your intended desire, or whatever.
Well, if you don't mind, would you mind like giving like a hypothetical of just an example of like what an intention could be and how those two things might work together to bring it, and what the circumstances could possibly look like?
So like, we can just take it to like materialism, like buying a car, right?
Yeah.
So in my head, I'd be like, oh my God, I want this car so bad, you know, and all that. That's totally my inner intention. Like, I'm going to work my ass off for it. You know, what can I do? I'm going to, you know, make a goal. I'm going to do a savings thing and all that. So that's totally your inner intention. Your outer intention would be like, dude, I'm going to get the car. Like, so you're choosing that script because, yeah, maybe my heart wants a Mustang because I like the freaking sound of the blinker, how it sounds like hoofbeats. It's just like it freaking, and I love the rev of the engine. It makes my soul freaking feel great. So if I just decide that I'm going to have it without desire, like I'm going to have it, then I freaking, I've chosen that film role. I'm going to allow myself to have it. That's it. And then make the first step. Like, it's like raising your hand instead of just like desiring to raise your hand, like,
man, it would be great I'm sure it would be great if I could raise my hand right now. Man, I would love to raise my hand. God, one of these days. Not today.
I know I can raise my hand.
I know I can. I can raise my hand. To do it. One day I'm going to do it. I'm going to raise my hand one day. It's going to happen. But you watch. I'll prove it to you. I will raise my hand. It's going to happen. I promise. I'm sure about it. I'm as sure about it as I am anything.
I'm going to set a goal.
I'm going to write it down. I'm going to do affirmations about raising my hand. I'm not going to tell anybody, or I'm going to tell everybody, but I'm going to raise my hand. It's going to happen. I will raise my hand. That's not,
it's literally just choosing the script. And then it's not versus the same as goal setting, because goal setting, it like overcomplicates it. It's just choosing it and going for it.
It does.
So like, if I want to get the Mustang, then literally I just need to decide it and then go to the dealership and see what happens.
I'm going to buy a Mustang. I am going to tell one of these, you watch and see, I'm going to buy me a Mustang.
So am I. I really do love driving them. They're really fun.
I don't know. I haven't driven one of the new ones or anything. It's been a long time since I've been in one. My mom had one a long time ago in like 2000. It was maybe a 2000s Mustang, early 2000s, you know, but it's been forever. Like the new ones are kind of like, I've seen a few of them. They look different, but anyway,
they're bougie, man. Like,
you know, that's
the
cool
door, and it'll have like the lit up, like on the ground, it'll have like lit up Mustang and
nice,
like a horse.
I like the Bronco. I think the Bronco is really cool.
I like driving really fast, so I like passing people at breakneck speeds. And
I don't see a lot of Mustangs around here. We have a lot of Chargers for some reason.
I've rented a couple, so I'm like, yeah, I need one.
Fair enough. No, that's cool. Yeah, I hope that example comes through, because that's such a good example.
I couldn't think of a better one. It's like,
no, that's a great example. And then you just saying like, I'm going to raise my hand. Watch. I promise. I'm going to prove everybody wrong and raise my hand.
Because like, you're never going to get that thing without just doing it or choosing to, you know, to see like, why can't I have it? I can have it. I'm going to go to the dealership and let's see.
There's thousands of them out there. Yeah. There's thousands of Mustangs. And there's somebody there who cannot wait to sell you one, I promise.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's another thing. We'll get into a little bit more in-depth things about shifting thinking. I'm still working on some of this stuff too and trying to incorporate just like, you know, for me as someone, like I run comedy shows, I need comedians, you know, and sometimes people hit me up and it's annoying. And I'm like, oh God, I don't want to hear from you. Other times people hit me up and I'm like, oh great. Yeah. I actually need somebody for that date. You're on, you know what I'm saying? So like, and when I'm hitting other people up, and I'm trying to get booked and I'm like, hey, how's it going? I'm going to be in town this day or whatever. I'm looking for shows, you know, I don't want to be the annoying person. I want to be able to offer something, you know, to them or solve a problem for them. And very many of them are looking for their problem to be solved. So by reaching out, I could potentially be solving their problem and mine. Also.
Yeah. You just got to choose to have your problem solved and then make the call, man.
That's right. It's exactly right. But it's just funny the way that we think about things and to be on one side versus being on the other side. But we'll get into that pretty soon also. Energy and frailing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I overthink things a lot and then I get in my own way. So it's like having my foot on the brake while trying to push the gas pedal. So really you do have to overcome the doubt of it all and just decide that you're allowed to have it. Whatever it is, like, and not just manifesting things, it's manifesting experience or choosing experiences, because that word is played out. But yeah,
I think experiences are more valid anyway. Like, obviously we need certain things. That's part of
yeah, well, that's part of the fun of the experience, I guess. But the experiences themselves are what we're trying to help our outcomes. We're choosing the vaudeville lifeline because why shouldn't we enjoy every moment of it?
Why shouldn't you enjoy every single moment? There's no reason not to enjoy as many of them as you can. And sometimes, you know, you're going to have, I don't know. I'm a moody person. I've admitted it before. I sometimes have my moods and I try to just embrace it and just like go with that, right? Like if I'm going to be in a mood, I'll just be in a mood and try to like lean into it, you know, and then embrace the experience, whatever it is, what it is. But, you know, as often and as constantly as possible, and I'm reading that Frederick Dodson book, not to book jump too. And he's talking about well-being as the precursor to these ideas of like manifestation or having these things in your life. We think that once we have the thing in our lives, then we'll be happy. But it's really the opposite of that. It's really starting out by being fulfilled and feeling good, enjoying life. He's like, the irony is the people that take my seminars will probably get the thing that they want to have anyway. You know what I mean? Like, and the people who won't come to my seminars because they're like, it's a ripoff. Then they're not going to get
it. You've already decided they don't. They're not worth right. it.
Exactly. But the other people probably wouldn't need it anyway. But you know, the people that I know who are extremely well to do, they might be having a very difficult time in their life, but every time I see them, they have something positive to say. They have a funny joke. They're in a great mood. They're sharing, you know, good spirits and they're fun to be around. And it's valuable.
You know, one thing that I kind of picked up from this book, which isn't explicitly written, I don't think, but it's something that, you know, like I've just inherently kind of adopted because we are all seeking happiness, right? Like it's this external thing. Mm-hmm. And this book really teaches you to balance everything out, right? Well, happy isn't balanced. It's not. I mean, that's what everybody strives for. And why do you have to strive for it? Because it's not a state that you can actually be forever. So I realized the state of balance isn't happy. It's not sad. It's not whatever. It's just being content. And I realized that we've got to be discontent for growth. We have to be in some areas. But really what we should all strive for is not even happiness. We should be striving to be content, to be at a place of equilibrium.
I know. Well, the older I get, the more I want to be at equilibrium. Like I used to want to go out and party and you know, go crazy. And it's like, I don't really care about that. I just want to be like, you know, like, just
I mean, like, that's a good spot.
I just want to be the reg, dude.
Like, you know? I want some of that, you know, because that makes it interesting. But overall, I'd like, you know,
well, you know, in the creativity aspect, right? Like in trying to create something. Like, I think it's very interesting. I think it's very, it's more interesting and important to have a range of emotions, right? Like, if you were to watch a movie and the people are just happy all the time, it'd be the most fucking boring movie.
Well, ever. It's kind of like tan leggings. We talked about them on Netflix and chill the other night. Like, you should never wear tan leggings. We don't want all neutral. Like,
right. And it also looks like you're naked.
It looks like you're naked. You shouldn't wear tan leggings.
It's I'm weird.
Go ahead and throw that out here now too. Yeah, and I don't care who you are.
I don't like
they
it.
Never look good.
No, not a fan. It's just weird.
It's but a yeah.
Football. Yeah, I need to. Yeah, that's a really good thing for me. I need to remember that too because I hate it. It's one of the things that I do like sort of fight against because I'm like, I should always be happy. I should never be in a bad mood, you know. But I'm kind of moody. But also being moody, that's the contrast. That's, that's the creative part of it. I just need to learn how to, I need to not fight against it. The more you fight against it, the worse it gets. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just lean into it and just allow those things to be what they are and make it vaudeville, make it fun, make it funny, make it something that's relatable. Cause I know everyone's moody. Nobody's in a chipper, happy mood all the time. I want to punch those people. Those people,
but it is funny when you can finally like when you're so moody and then you're getting sick of yourself. Do you get sick of yourself when you're doing it? And then all of a sudden you're laughing at yourself. And
yes, that happens too. That happens too. Or like,
and then you can find neutrality again. You're like, oh, we're good. Yeah.
Or like I'm waiting on something to happen or somebody to do something or whatever. And I just get all fussy about it. And then like, oh, they had a great excuse or they're, you know, they didn't have their phone with them or I don't know, some random thing happens and then I hear the story and I'm like, oh, I'm an asshole.
I'm an asshole too. I decided I should write a book called Abby's an Asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. It's human. We're humans. And that's part of this too. You know, we're not trying to be some pious, douchey, holier than thou type of person. We get to be the participant. And try to shift our awareness.
Maybe I want to be a douchey, holier-than-thou person.
Okay. I'm talking about
the
royal we. I'm talking about my heart and mind. but I know you don't. But no, it's true. Like Wendy says, find the absurdity in all the things. It's there along
it with is.
The door lining. Beautiful. And own your inner dirt bag. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I lived like a dirt bag. I lived like a dirt bag for years out of a van, eating free food, bathing in rivers. Some of the best days of my life. It was a good time. I really enjoyed it. It's not what I want anymore, but I did enjoy and appreciate those times. And I can still go back to that life. In a snap, just living
that life line isn't too. You could choose that film role if you want to.
Oh, it's an easy one to choose. I can just drive an hour and a half north and then just live like a dirtbag hippie raft guide anytime, any old day I want, which is awesome. And I still do sometimes part time just to. Yeah, just because I like it. Anyway. All right. So intention in conclusion, Abby.
Yeah. If you want to know more about dreaming, we can always talk about that. Yes. Chat us up on the Telegram.
Yeah, please come hang out on the Telegram chats. I will put that link in here. I'm pretty sure it's in the show notes. Let me see what else. I'll just pump this stuff again. I'll just put it in here again one more time. If you guys are looking for cool shit to do, there's no shortage. There's no shortage going to be. Eclipse of the Canyon, I will be there. I will have a friend of mine with me. My friend Laura is awesome. We're traveling out. I'm going to be doing some stand-up shows on the way out. I'm still looking at a couple of dates, but I got some dates in New Orleans. I'm going to be in Austin. I'm going to be in New Orleans on April 5th. I'm going to be in Austin the 9th and 10th, and then probably Houston on the 11th and maybe Houston on the 6th. I'm still looking at a couple of dates. If you guys know anybody in those areas, shoot me a message. If you're going to be in those areas, shoot me a message. I'll be at Eclipse at the Canyon There's a lot of bands and cool stuff going on. This is like a campground type of event. And that is on April 8th is when the eclipse is. So starting April 6th to April 9th. And it's kind of like a bohemian camping. Bring your inner dirt bag. You're going to want your outer sleeping bag as well. We're going to see an eclipse. It's going to be awesome. And then in May, Befriending Bigfoot excursion with the Expanding Reality folks, Chris Matthew from the Forbidden Knowledge News. I can't wait to meet these folks. They're amazing. I've talked to Brandon several times and he's awesome. They're literally going to be looking for Bigfoot, going to a Bigfoot museum, doing some hikes on Blood Mountain on the Appalachian Trail. Blairsville's beautiful. They're doing like some river stuff and they've got a lot of other cool upcoming events. I really like this guy's work, Expanding Reality Podcast. Check it out. I'm going to be doing a very special performance at this event that you don't want to miss. So check that out. And then we will be back next week and talking about slides. Very excited. Slides. Yeah, slides are cool. something that I need to do some work on myself. So it'll be good to
go through. Magic happens, y'all.
Yeah. This is where like a lot of people talk about a Neville Goddard overlapping. And you know, lots of other, this is the secret as well, you know, with this, we're getting into the deep goodness here. It's a lot of fun. Thank you guys for tagging along with us on this exploration. And, yeah, we'll see y'all next week. Much love.
Good night.
Have a good one. Thanks, everybody.